we're going to be right in here from the beginning. You know, whichever one of you wants to go first, in question, what made you want to start playing music in the first place? Was it a band? Was it a song?
For me, I was my sister's boyfriend was a bass player in a Rush cover band, and they blew me away. Like I went to see them a couple times, once at my eighth grade dance and once at like a 4th of July thing in Suquamish, and they were so good. I was just mesmerized, and so I picked up guitar probably a couple months after that happened.
All right, crazy. I broke my leg, and then so I picked up the guitar and started playing that, and that's kind of what had me down the road, because prior to that, I was, like, really into being a big soccer player and stuff, just kind of wanted to do, so anyway, yeah, broke my leg, and it kind of changed my course.
So instead of having a big musical epiphany, you were playing.
Yeah, no, I had a big femur epiphany.
Oh. Wow. That sounds like you should write a song that or something. It sounds like a good premise for a book. You couldn't make that shit up.
Chadwin,
So,
Chad, the first time that we met, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to ask Chad, the first time we met, I was about 11 and he was like 14. Was your accident before that or after that?
Oh, it was before all that. That all happened when I was living in Yakima. Because when I first came here to Washington in like 79, I think it was, I was in Port Angeles. Mm. And then from Port Angeles is actually when I first moved to Polso, which I moved to the Surf Rest area. Oh God, now my brain's all confused. When did I get to Yakima? You know what? It might have been after that. Because we didn't really know who each of us were.
No.
That whole tree incident, that we had no idea. So you know what? I think it actually happened after that. Gosh, you're right. Jeez.
So yeah, I think you would have been maybe 13 or 14 that time we met. But how
old
were you when the accident happened?
Let's see. I think I was about 14, I think 13 or 14. Yeah, because I was 13 in like in 80, and that's when I moved to that area.
Okay.
So that's when we, you know, unaware of each other, that's when we first met. So yeah, that would have been the 1980. So yeah, gosh dang.
Hey, that answers my next question, and I'm just over here having the time of my life, getting to be a fly on the wall hearing this. So did you guys start playing then, and was it the Magnet Men or doing different stuff? And what were you playing? Like what songs?
Well, I was playing a little bit with Chris Carr, our bass player, in high school, and I hadn't really even hung out with Chad yet as sort of the second time we had met, but Chris and I were jamming on some stuff, and he said he knew a drummer named Chad, and we should try to hook up with him and jam for a little while and kind of see what would happen. So we had met a couple times around like 1987, I guess, and we figured out that we had met each other later or earlier in life, but yeah, we started jamming. We didn't call ourselves Magnet Men for a while. We didn't really have a name for a while. We just started, like, I don't know, jamming on songs that we thought were weird and complex and fun to play and stuff. and it just kind of, I don't remember how we came up with the name Magnet Men, but we, it just, I don't know, seemed about right at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Because I met you, I was at the Rhododendron apartment on the island, and you and Brian Noble showed up at one of my parties. And I think that was the first time that I'd met you. And I had that old Ibanez acoustic, and I think you at some point during the night had picked it up and started jamming, and I was like, oh wow, that guy plays guitar, that's really cool. Then you like come new and some riff stuff or whatever, and I was like, oh wow, that's pretty right on. So yeah, that's kind of was like how I knew that, oh, you're a guitar player. So it was kind of cool when and the idea was like, yeah, let's, you know, get together and jam sometime. I was like, yeah, that'd be great. But yeah, you're right. We didn't have a name or anything like that. We just kind of came up with stuff. And, hey, this song's got 13 parts. Cool, let's do that.
Yeah, pretty much. We didn't really know how to like fit the parts together, and we didn't really care if they made sense, because that was like even more challenging if they were kind of like different parts, but somehow we were able to make the change abruptly and tight, you know, and like make it sound cool, even though that you wouldn't necessarily imagine those two parts being in the same song. You know what I mean? So,
Oh yeah, right.
We just like challenge ourselves.
Yeah, we were the kind of people that would force the puzzle piece in the slot.
Exactly.
It's going to go there. I'm going to tear.
You can't do it.
Yeah.
Why?
Right. Yep.
That's one thing I did notice on the EP, which we'll get to, obviously. But the songs obviously come from back then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely.
Yeah, they're all songs we wrote.
At first listen, they sound simple, but when you actually really listen to what everyone's doing, it's actually quite freaking phenomenal, in my opinion, because there's so much to it. Even though it's got a simple premise, there's so much intricacies that you guys throw in.
Yeah, I mean, like John was saying earlier, I mean, the idea of just coming up with different parts and making them fit. But, you know, and as a drummer, you know, for me, I always like the idea of, well, if this part of the song is going to change, I want to make sure that even the beat itself is going to change. So a lot of the times, and some of our songs, I'd have like a different kind of drum beat for each section, and it would never come back around to it. I think we had a couple songs that were kind of like that. So it was, I don't know, trying to imagine what, how to create like orchestra rock or something, or whatever, you know, classical rock into punk rock or something. And,
almost,
yeah,
you know,
and I think when
rock approach.
Yeah, I think when we were deciding which songs to choose for the EP, not having played together in whatever 30 years, of any of those songs, we kind of chose ones that we thought we could probably pull off. Like there's songs in our catalog that are really fucking difficult, that are just, we'd have to like listen to the old tapes and try to even remember how to play them. So we kind of chose four songs that we thought were like our favorite songs, but that we could actually pull off being 50 plus years old, you know, and playing punk rock when you're over 50, it's hard. It's like, it takes a lot of physical coordination and energy. And we noticed pretty quickly that we'd get tired fast.
I know what you're talking about, because I mean, I remember playing punk rock and really being into the scene and everything. And sometimes I listen back to some of the records and some of the stuff I was trying to play, and I'm like, good God, my hand would fall off or cramp up within 10 seconds.
Right.
And I'm only, I'm 30 August. I'm not even that old. But
you're in trouble now.
Especially for a drummer, man.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'll send you a Get Well Soon card.
I identify as a fan. It's not in the age, it's in the mileage.
Yeah, you know, something like that, yep. It was a lot of fun going back in the studio and doing that stuff, though. It's just sort of like, wow, I haven't done this in like forever, but it was like, kind of rekindling the feel and the vibe and the flow of the songs. It took a while, like John said. I mean, there's definitely some rust to crack off.
Oh, no.
In the songs, but once I stretched them out a bit, I was like, you know, found that flow. I was like, oh, this is cool. Plus, the really exciting part was actually the fact that we've never really had a studio recording of anything that we ever did. I mean,
yeah.
The closest thing we had was we have some four-track stuff, but then we had the recording at the radio station at Chaos, and, you know, and that was bad. So the idea of just, like, actually going into a studio and just, like, you know, throw the mics on the drums and all stuff and record was like, yahoo.
And you know what? You know what, Chad? I just think we remember a conversation we had back in those days. I think the band was just about to call it quits. We're like, you know what? Shit, it sucks we never got to really record anything. But maybe someday when we're 50 years old, we'll go into the studio and record some of this shit. I swear to God, we talked about that. And then lo and behold, it actually happened.
The joke became reality.
Yeah.
See, that's what I think.
And sorry, I keep interrupting you.
Go ahead, dude.
I just wanted to add something. Like, the funny part of it was that we never even really had the idea until Chad and I were both doing some Nerd Table stuff with Tad. They brought us in to do some tracks, and we just got talking about it in the studio. And we're like, yeah, we should really just do that. We could do it. We could just go into the studio and record some songs and see how it goes. And it was that session that we got talking about it.
Yep.
I think that's one of the coolest things about this whole thing is that you guys just got together to record songs from a band that you were in that never got to record a bunch of stuff that you really liked just for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, there was a couple of small little hurdles to think about. Like, whether or not Chris was going to be into it or not. And, you know, luckily he was, you know, we were able to get him the idea. Of course, Ben Shepherd was a long shot, but, you know, had to try. And at first he said he would be interested and he'd do it, but, you know, wasn't surprising when he finally said, yeah, sorry, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. So I was like, yeah, whatever. I mean, we started out as a three-piece anyway, so it's like, you know, it was the Magnet Men before he ever even entered the scene for the band. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. We did our own singing, such as it was. So,
yeah, I think it would have been hard for him to capture that kind of energy again.
Yeah.
He was just such a crazy dude.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
It was like the whole point of his being in the band was just be as crazy and as much of a spectacle as possible. And
yeah,
he filled that role perfectly.
Yeah. That one show that we had, he came out and he brought that mannequin out, and then he was wearing panties over his jeans.
And he bends the mannequin over and starts fucking it on stage. And yeah, just, that was what we need, a little showmanship.
Yeah, showmanship. Oh, boy.
Fucking great. I don't even think I need to. I could just let you guys do it.
Yeah, we'll just take it down the rabbit hole. Yeah.
Ironically, when we finished the EP, when we finished the EP, we were just starting to talk about what was happening in China, and we're like, yeah, people are just dropping dead like flies over there. What's going on? And then we managed to finish it, and we had some kind of tentative plans to play a few shows, or, you know, just to have like some, to play a party or record release or something. And then COVID hit, and then all of a sudden we had just finished mastering and the whole country was shut down. And we had, like, all our plans for playing shows was just, you know, on the shelf for now. So hopefully at some point we can actually have a proper record release party, and if we can talk Kristen into doing it.
Yeah. I still want to. I mean, he said he was going to. He said he'd be up for doing a show. So I hope that, you know, even with the passage of time, that he'd still be in to do it, because I really do want to do a live.
I really think we should. Yeah.
I want to learn more of the other songs and stuff, and just, you know, put it just a whatever set list together and just kind of, you know, work it. I think it'd be fun.
Absolutely.
I'd be there too if I could possibly make it. I'd fly over there to make a show like that. I know that sounds insane. I really like your podcast, okay?
Right on. Well, if we manage to pull it off and actually line a date for the show at some point, whenever that is, I don't know. We'll certainly let you know, and you can find out whether you can make the flight or not.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll at least record it in video.
And I'm scared. So I hope you know what that means. I'm like literally putting my paranoia on hold just to see you guys play.
Oh.
Yeah, that's big.
Don't like to fly, huh?
I've never actually flown, so.
Oh.
But I'm scared of heights naturally, so.
Oh.
I don't know.
Well, that'd be a big deal for you then.
Yeah, but I'd do it if it meant I got to see you guys play.
Yeah, you'd conquer your fears. There you go.
Big old punk rock sport.
Yeah, we'll be like the therapy service band, you know. We'll get you over your weird trips and make it a good trip.
Boy, it'd be hard to take your first plane flight be like a 5 or 6 hour cross country flight, though. I mean, just if you have any kind of reservations about it, it would just, you know, maybe try like a little short hopper to Atlantic City or something first before you hop on a plane across the country.
Yeah, although I will say, if it's more of an issue of height, I don't really have that in an airplane. It's kind of weird. It's not like you're like climb a very tall tower or something like that and look down and go, whoa. I don't have a fear of heights, but I don't know if that would play in as much, because like you're sitting down, you're kind of in this cabin, you can close the door, you don't even have to look out the window ever. I don't know, but
yeah,
just speculation. Not really sure.
What it feels like. It's not like being in an open, you know, propeller two-passenger plane at these.
Yeah. No, you won't be flying with the Wright brothers, so.
Yeah. But so you guys don't have a plan to like do a big tour or anything like that, then?
No.
Nope. Not unless someone pays us so much money, it's absurd and amazing.
Yeah.
We
have pretty.
That happening.
Yeah, we have complex family lives and jobs and all that stuff. So.
Oh, I guess
it would be a tough one.
You'd never get Chris out of the house anyway. So.
Oh, I know.
But yeah.
After COVID. Somehow things will turn and all of a sudden good music will be a thing again and someone will offer you like a billion gajillion dollar contract.
Yeah, never have to work again. Could do anything for a bajillion dollars.
I wonder what $1 billion would do to our quirky little punk rock style. Could we even maintain that? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm no kidding. There's something kind of
Guns N' Roses and corn section on the stage.
Yeah. That underground got way above ground.
Yeah. And it smelled like shit. Oops. Did I say that? Yeah. So, Magnet Men broke up. Then when?
88 at some point.
Yeah.
I'm not for sure when.
It was early 88, I think, I'm trying to think. The show that we had at the Tacoma World Theater, I think, was the last live show we played.
We actually played a party at somebody's house on Bainbridge after that, but it was cold. I remember, like, my hands could barely even play the notes because it was pretty cold outside, so it could have been.
Oh, right.
I can't remember whose house that was. I want to say maybe Emily Williams' son. Could have been, but
yeah,
Ben was in the band, and we played.
Yeah.
We played like a night, and then I can't remember what part of the year that was, but I don't think we lasted too much longer after that.
Yeah, I think that probably would have been around January or something like that, because it was still kind of chilly. It was still kind of brisk out, I recall, when I was first getting courted by by Kurt and Chris. So
yeah.
So yeah, it would have been that.
John first, what he was doing after Magnet Men, because the whole world knows about what you did there, Chad. So we'll get to you in a second.
Okay.
So yeah, after Magnet Men, I got, you know, one of my best friends, one of our best friends is named Andy Miller as well. And he was actually a drummer in a band I was in called Buddha's Favorite Color. And we played for about 4 years from 89 to like 93 with a, you know, some time off in between. But it was kind of like a psychedelic heavy band.
Did you guys record anything? Because that sounds right up my alley too.
We recorded three different demo tapes. Two of them were at Reciprocal Recordings with Rich Hinklin. That was the same studio that they recorded Bleach and a bunch of the other early Nirvana stuff at. And a lot of the early stuff was recorded there. And yeah, we played around quite a bit over those years. Kind of simultaneously while Nirvana was a band. I don't think we ever played together. Although we were supposed to play together at a party that got raided by the cops. remember Chris was standing underneath a door jam and a piece of plywood fell down and hit him in the head really hard. And it like knocked him so dizzy that he thought he couldn't play. So we're like, oh shit, Nirvana just better go first. So you guys started playing, and like four songs into the set, the cops showed up. This is like an underage drinking kind of party, and they grabbed Rob Day, was like the only guy holding a beer. Like the first guy they saw holding a beer was grabbed. Everyone else scattered like cockroaches. Rob got nabbed, and they I don't know what they did with him. Probably gave him a ticket or something. But yeah, that we didn't get to play that night because the whole thing got shut down like four songs into your set. So
yeah, I remember that really got closed down quick. Yeah, poor Rob. He was like, the funny thing was it wasn't even his beer.
No.
He just walked up and like, I think it was like Mike Houghton or somebody was like, hey dude, I'm going to go take a piss. So hold my beer. So Rob just held his beer and only had it in his hand for like maybe a couple minutes before the cops showed up. Just bag him.
Yoink.
Like, oh, fuck. I'm sorry, Rob.
That's too bad. It was sounding really good. I was. You guys were like cranking it out. Everything sounded great in that. It was like a garage or a barn or something like that.
Yeah,
for some reason, it sounded wonderful in there.
Yeah, yeah. That was just a total shame, but oh well. She's
so bad. We'll move on to you now.
Well, I'll say this. So actually, before the Magnet Men, I was in a total thrash metal band called Stone Crow.
Oh,
and,
okay.
You know, I was really into like Slayer, Saw and Destruction, Creator, you know, stuff like that. And I started the band was started by the guy we were just talking about who got busted, Rob Day, and anyway he was the bass player and stuff. So he was like,
oh,
you know,
shit.
So we were in that band for, when that was like 95 to 96 or something like that. We did a lot of stuff. We played a lot of shows. We played with like Closing Conformity. We played with DRI and a lot of other great bands too. But anyway, just. Since he was mentioned being the guy with the holding the beer, I thought I'd give you a wee bit of background on him first. But anyway, yeah. So yeah, after that, that was like the weird sort of a slow transition because the show that the Magnet Men played at the Tomb of World Theater is we played that show with Nirvana, except they were called Bliss at the time. And that's when those guys first heard of us and saw me play and stuff. And so I don't know how long it was after all that and the Magnum. It wasn't that long. I feel like it might have been within like a month or two or something like that. I'm not really like specific on this, but They'd come up and ask if I wanted to see or watch them come play a show. Because I went back to the Tacoma World Theater and to watch Malfunction play a show, and which ended up being Malfunction's very last show. I didn't know it was at the time, but it turned out being their last show. But anyway, Kurt and Chris were both there, and that's when I ended up talking to them. And my friend Damon Romero, actually, he introduced me to them, like officially, I think. And anyway, that's when they called me up and saw him play, and they're like, "So, what do you think? You want to be your drummer and stuff, or do you want to jam?" That's what they said. So, you know, which is what everybody always says. You want to jam first? Let's not call it a band. Let's just jam first. Test the waters. Anyway, so we jammed, and then we jammed again, and that's all we ever did. We just kind of got together and rehearsed or jammed and jammed through rehearsal. There was never a point where anyone said, "Okay, you're in the band." It's just I just kept playing drums for them, and that's kind of it. Just sort of turned in that way. So,
nice.
Anyway, so yeah, yeah, and that's kind of how that happened. But after all that, then I ended up just doing other. Well, then after Nirvana, then there was then briefly, me and John were actually back in a band again. I can't remember what we called ourselves. Was it Heavens to Betsy or something like that?
Oh, was that with Paul Hine? Or
I think it was Paul Hine. I think it was with Paul Hine. I don't know.
When did we get together with Damon? We were in Yonsturm, and it was like a weekend. It wasn't a band.
Yeah.
It was like a weekend.
Yeah, I thought, but it was killer though. That was like two or three songs that we just wrote on the spot and just barfed out. Recorded it actually because I was recording still. Yeah, Yonsturm was freaking cool. I kind of think back to that and I was like, man, I wish that would have stuck, but it didn't.
Yeah. Damon wasn't interested in starting a band. I think you and I would have been open to it, but he was like, nah.
Yeah, well, I think he was still rooted down in Olympia and stuff, and he went on to, you know, to do Treehouse.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so we were briefly, and I think it was Paul Hine, and then after that, I ended up playing with Kevin Wood. And later Brian Wood from the Wood Brothers, from Andy Wood and from Malfunction and whatnot. And
yeah.
So I was in a band with them. We're called the Fire Ants for quite a while. And up until, I think, 94, 95. And then me and John get back together in a band again with two other guys we'd never played with before. And call ourselves the Methodists. We were together for what? For 94?
Was
96, 97, 98 or something? Or
yeah, we were together for like 3 or 4 years. We did the record came out in 98.
Right.
But we played together for at least a couple of years before that that happened. We made a few demos, played around a bunch because we played a bunch of shows.
Toured, went down to the West Coast.
Yeah, toured, played at the Whiskey.
Yeah, first time I ever played the Whiskey.
That's a band I always felt should have stay together longer, even though
it should have.
I don't know what our lives were like, but I guess we just didn't want to stick with it that long. But I thought we had a really interesting sound, and our songs were well crafted, and it's still one of my favorite things we've done together.
Yeah,
I'm not sure,
but whatever.
Do all of these recordings still exist, by the way?
Oh yeah. We have CDs. The Methodists are, I don't know if we have anything on. No, we don't have anything on like Apple Music, but
no.
We should just put it up there. We have a bunch of CDs left, and there's some digital here and there. But
yeah, there's a lot of CDs left of the record. Yeah. I've got a little boxes at the other house, so. But yeah, a lot of that stuff left. But yeah, that's definitely one band I thought. Yeah, I'm not sure how it. I think kind of some of it was when Eric talked about wanting to be more of a three piece than a four piece, and we ended up changing our name briefly to TV Ivy, and then we had that went into those recordings, was it four songs or something like that, which were really really cool.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There was I just sort of felt there was something up with, like, Eric that maybe, I don't know, it seemed like something was shifting in him. I couldn't really tell, but it just sort of seemed like once, you know, we became a three-piece and stuff, it just, I don't know, something, you know.
That was a weird time for music in Seattle, too. There was it was a kind of a really sparse scene. I mean, there was probably a lot of bands, but it just didn't feel like there was much interesting things going on, and I remember just having a really hard time keeping our shows going. Like, it was just hard to book shows. There wasn't a lot of, I don't know, rock at that time. Maybe, I don't know what was going on in Seattle at that time, but it was just hard to keep it rolling. Eventually, we just kind of went our separate ways, doing other stuff. So
yeah, it got saturated. I think mm-hmm. with the whole, you know, grunge movement thing, so many people just, well, I mean, lots of people moved up here and stuff, and so there was all this stuff going on there. I mean, it was like almost like a crowded market of just all kinds of stuff going on, and just, I don't know, like I said, I think maybe the scene just got oversaturated with things, and it's just made it so difficult because, you know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry was, you know, barking to get a show, you know, and everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. The feel was different. It wasn't quite the same.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't a grunge band by any means.
No.
Well, some of our songs were, I don't know, simple and dirty, but mostly we were more in the vein of, like, Buzzcocks.
Yeah.
Kind of, like, high-energy pop punk.
Yep.
Good harmonies and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very much like that. Really early Elvis Costello, Mine Is True type of
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Yep.
Well, John, what I meant by that, too, was do you have any recordings of that heavy psychedelic stuff you did after the Magnet?
Oh, yeah, we do. Yeah, I've got some on. I've got some digitally I could send you if you want to check it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah, definitely worth checking out.
Buddha's Favorite Color played a bunch of shows with Fire Ants, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was weird together at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, love
I'd still – go ahead.
Like, I'm definitely interested in getting the rest of your guys' catalog. So if we can work that out.
We can work out some kind of Dropbox thing or something. We'll upload everything I've got.
And Chad, there's only one ask about that one famous band is, what is one warm memory that you have from that time in that band?
Well, I guess one of my personal favorites is we were on tour. We were driving in Montana, and I was driving. Chris and Kurt were asleep. Kurt was asleep in the back, and Chris was just, you know, nodding off in the passenger side. And he finally kind of wakes up, and he wakes up and he just jolts up, and he goes, he's like, no, what are you doing? He's like, what are you doing? And I just kind of look over. I'm awkward because I'm driving with my teeth, you know. So I've got my teeth on the steering wheel and stuff. And I look at him. He goes, that's dangerous. You can't do that. And I'm like, I back away from it, you know, and I put my hands back on the wheel and stuff. And I said, okay. You know, he goes, that's really dangerous. Because he was kind of tweaking. I was just like doing everything to calm him down. I was like, yeah, no worries. I'll you know, drive with my hands. Of course, I did not have the heart to tell him that I'd already been driving that way for almost an hour and a half to 2 hours. So, yeah, I had to leave that out.
wasn't Tad in the van at that time, too? Didn't he tell us that story? Or?
No, Tad wasn't. Nobody.
Maybe we were just telling the story while he was there. Okay.
Well, it's possible, yeah. I think on that tour, we actually might have crossed a path, like, with Madison or something like that, or whenever, because sometimes, you know, with all the Sub Pop bands, we'd end up crossing paths with each other along the way, you know, which was always really fun. You're like, oh, Tad's going to be playing in town like the next day, or you know, or we have a show together that same night or something like that, so that's always kind of cool. But so yeah, it's possible that story could be relayed there, but that was personally one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So great.
Well,
yep.
Like straight roads, right?
Well, yeah, mostly. That's why I was driving with my teeth. It was boring.
I mean, I'd imagine that would be rough. Oh, wow, that's great.
Yep. You do anything to kill boredom.
In the future.
What's that?
What's in the future for both of you?
Well, I think we'd probably like to make another record at some point.
We've
already talked about like kind of which songs we'd want to put on it, and we may just combine the EP into an LP if we have enough songs, and then you know release that, or we maybe just another EP. Not really sure, but I think that's something we'd like to do. We just have to get all the logistics of our lives together, because Chad and Chris both live not too far away. They only live about a ferry ride and about a 30-minute drive away. But, you know, being grown-ups with families and stuff, it's always kind of hard to figure out how you're gonna do things. But I think we'd love to make another record.
Yeah, definitely. I think that'd be a great idea. And we can even do what we did before. I mean, it was easy enough to, like, you know, go to your place because you had that, you know, electric kit set up. So it was kind of simple. You know, it's just a matter of just the economics of driving back and forth across the ferry, which is not really that big of a deal. So.
Yeah, it's not.
But I think that would be fun to do, just definitely, because, I mean, there were so many songs we had in that catalog of ours.
I know.
Ridiculous. And there's so many cool ones. Like, think back to what we already did, and I was like, I'm glad we did those songs, but then there's others, it's like, oh, I really like to do those too. So
totally.
When you get Chris on board, I think it'd be fun to at the very least do another EP, you know.
Absolutely.
So yeah. And as far as that for myself, I mean, I'm, you know, I of course I've had the Before Cars, you know, band going for a long time, and you know, eventually I have to get a third record done, because I've got a complete third record already written for that. I just have to go in the studio, find time, and actually get it out of my head and finally get it done with. But
I understand.
Yeah, that's pretty much going on.
All right. So what do you guys love about music?
Good question. I think it's just the way it makes you feel. If it makes you feel something, like almost anything, it can be great, and then that can be any genre of music, whether it's, you know, classical, jazz, punk, thrash metal, whatever. If it moves you in some way, then it's worth it. That's why the way I feel about it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I love about music is the same thing that everybody on earth listens to music for. Is that music invokes a feeling. That's why people love music. I mean, it's one of the base instincts of a human being. It's just like, you know, people were pounding on logs with sticks and stuff before like electric guitars and anything else. So it's really, music is such an early, early base human instinct, because it provokes a feeling. And that is why anybody loves music. And that's why I love music.
Yeah. And when you combine that with connection between band members, and that the connection you feel with each other, it just makes the whole experience so much richer and memorable. Even if the experience of being in a band is full of, you know, joy and tension and frustration and everything else, you come back again for those moments where it all comes together, and you just feel like you're creating a moment for each other and for others, you know.
Yeah, there's a certain kind of magic in that, when it's like when you take the things that you feel for music, stuff like that, and then it's like you're just sharing that with somebody else, and it's, you're bouncing it off them, and they're bouncing theirs off you, and it's just kind of like and when it clicks, it's just like, yeah, that's good stuff.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Life quote, Chad Channing, that's good stuff. been an absolute delight. I don't know where to go from here. You guys basically covered it all. I barely had to do anything. But guys, it's been an absolute delight.
Well, thanks for doing it.
Yeah, we enjoyed it.
I mean,
it's very cool.
I can see that. I mean, the whole thing was genuine, and I just can't thank you enough. I really love your record. I hope to see the next one, you know, sooner rather than later, but whenever you can get it out. I'm a fan, so you know.
Well, right on, right on.
All right.
Very cool.
All right.
And take care of yourselves. And one thing I wanted to mention, because you said about, you know, humans haven't banging on sticks. If you make it to Buffalo, I don't know how long it goes on, but they have a museum going on from medieval to metal, the story of how the guitar has kind of metamorphosed from the medieval era up to the modern electric guitar.
Oh, cool.
I plan to check that out soon. But
yeah, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I thought I'd pass it your way, just in case if by chance somehow something happens soon where you can make it. I don't know how long it runs for, but I wanted to mention that to you.
Well, all right, man.
Yeah, it's good info. Right. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well,
thanks, guys. This was fun. And, hey, best of luck out there.
All right, Andy. It's been a pleasure.
Yep, been a pleasure. Good talking to you. Have yourself a splendid evening.
Ah, it's
right.
Night here. All right. Take it easy, guys.
Yep.
Right, good night.
See you guys later.
Bye. Night.